understand the purpose of human existence as we enter the new millennium. World News and Prophecy presents an analysis of world affairs and the answers to the great questions of life in light of the Word of God. This program will help you unlock the true meaning behind the events in the Middle East, the global economy, politics, and religion. And now, for World News and Prophecy, Dr. Donald Ward.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to today's program. What would the world be like if the majority of the peoples of the world believed there was no God? Some of the pseudo-intellectuals of the land would have you believe that God doesn't exist. The God doubters make such statements as religion numbs the mind and prevents people from thinking rationally. The God doubters claim that to believe in God prevents one from being able to intelligently discuss the great issues that are facing the human race at this critical, crucial juncture in human history. But what is more rational and what requires more faith? To believe in the great Creator God, or to believe that the universe and all that is therein, including human life, just burst forth from nothingness? One of the greatest questions of the ages is the question of origins. That is, where did matter come from? And where did life come from? Did matter spring from nothingness? And if matter sprang from nothingness, how did inanimate matter generate life? The God doubters want to talk about how religious folks deny science, but the most valid scientific laws of biogenesis state that life comes only from life, and life forms produce after their own kind. The God doubters deny these two great scientific laws of biogenesis, but they try to label people of faith as ignorant, unthinking people who deny the findings of science. When asked where life comes from, the God doubters will eventually say, most of them, "Oh, it came from the sea." When asked where the sea comes from or came from, they will eventually say, "From the rocks." When asked where the rocks came from, they will say, "From the elements." When asked where the elements came from, they will say, "From the air." When asked where the air came from, they really have no answer. The line of questioning can, of course, go in different directions, and there can be many sub-lines to where did this or that come from. But regardless as to how the line of questioning goes, it eventually gets down to the fact that the God doubters believe that the universe and thus life sprang out of nothingness. All of these various theories regarding the origin of the universe, including the Big Bang Theory and others, assume the existence of matter. For the God doubters, there is no intelligent creator. It's just all a matter of happenstance, that certain laws and phenomena came together that cannot be really accounted for, but they just happened. And so we have what we see. We have the universe and we have the life therein. So, do you want to talk about what is rational? Do you want to talk about what requires a leap of faith that very few religious people would embrace? Then try to convince the peoples of the world that the universe and human life have no purpose. According to the online publication Wikipedia, the comedian and political critic Bill Maher is often critical of organized religion, and perhaps his definition or how he views organized religion should be criticized, because indeed there is much hypocrisy in religion, but that doesn't do away with the facts of the Bible and whether or not the Bible is inspired and whether or not the Bible does indeed square with what is the truth of science. And once again, we go back to the law of biogenesis, that life comes from life and that life begets after its own kind. Maher has described religion as a neurological disorder that spreads guilt and hatred among people while offering nothing in return. But on the other hand, what do the progressive secularists have to offer? What do the secular humanists have to offer? What do the atheists have to offer? And what has science wrought? As we look at the world today, what would we say? Are the social barometers, political barometers, economic barometers indicating that we are getting better with regard to our abilities to take care of all the needs of the peoples of the world? Or do we see a situation in which the mass of humanity is spiraling downward in an attempt just to survive? Marr has described on his, or stated on his shows, one politically incorrect in real time, and in several appearances on the Larry King Show, that he does indeed believe in God, but that organized religion is nothing more than tradition and superstition. In 2002, he told the Onion AV Club, the Onion AV Club is an entertainment newspaper, quote, "I'm not an atheist." He went on to say, quote, "There's really a big difference between an atheist and someone who doesn't believe in religion." He said, "Religion to me is a bureaucracy between man and God that I don't need." By asserting that God is a bureaucrat, Marr seems to be saying that he doesn't need God telling him what to think and how to behave. More and more people are making God over into their own image. What does it mean to make God over in your own image? It means that you claim to believe in God, and you, through an eclectic process of picking and choosing, determine what you believe concerning God and how you should view life, who you should view, how you should view others, and how you should live. In other words, you make up your worldview and value system and attribute it to God, but it is really a product of your own mind. Thus, you make God over into your own image and worship yourself, which is idolatry. For example, Marr says, "I'm not an atheist, no. I believe there's some force, if you want to call it God. I don't believe God is a single parent who writes books. Of course, if you really understood the plan and purpose of God, you know would know, and know that you know, that God is our Father, and that He is bringing many sons and daughters to glory in His family." He goes on to assert that organized religion provides answers to questions, quote, "that cannot possibly be answered." Questions such as, "Where do I go when I die?" or "Is there a heaven?" He says these questions are impossible to answer. And apart from revelation, Marr is correct. Moral and spiritual knowledge can only be acquired through revelation. And when revelation is denied, man is left to the machinations of his own mind. Marr argues that by claiming to have the answers to these questions, they are dishonest, and such claims, quote, he says, stops people from thinking. What about thinking about the origin of the universe? What makes more sense, to believe that there is a great creator God who brought these things into existence, or to believe that they came into existence out of nothingness? Which is more rational? Which requires a greater leap of faith? In essence, Marr seems to be saying that if these answers are revealed to him, it would prevent him from thinking about it. But does one ever gain closure by trying to figure out on his own whether God exists? Where did life come from? And is there any purpose for human existence? The only way you can gain closure and know that you know the answers to these great questions is through revealed knowledge. The so-called best minds of the human race have been thinking about the great questions of life for thousands of years and have written thousands of books. But their great pulsating minds are no closer to the truth than they were 6,000 years ago. As the Apostle Paul writes in 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 7, "Ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth." The truth frees humankind from fear, ignorance, superstition, and the dogmas of man. They will know and know that they know what is the plan and purpose of God. And who is man, what is man, and what is his purpose? When revelation and the spirit world are denied, humans are left to their finite physical minds. The Bible makes it clear that revealed knowledge, that is, spiritual knowledge, must be revealed. The Apostle Paul, writing in 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 10, "But God hath revealed them unto us by His Spirit, for the Spirit searches all things, yes, the deep things of God. For what man knows the things of a man, save the spirit of man which is in him? As when God created humankind, He gave humankind, imparted to him certain faculties of mind that were akin to God, that allowed him to think and to reason, to even think about life after death. Even so, the things of God knows no man but the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit which is of God, that we might know the things that are freely given to us of God." The Apostle Paul prefaces these statements with what is in store for those who truly understand the plan and purpose of God when he states in 1 Corinthians 2, 9, "Eye hath not seen, ear hath not heard, neither has it entered into the hearts of men what God has prepared for those who love him." On the other hand, Satan the devil has blinded the world to the glorious truth of the gospel, and the devil has fathered a system of Gnosticism that claims to provide the answers to the great questions of life. Notice how the Apostle Paul describes the work of Satan in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 4, "In whom the god of this world," and the god of this world is Satan the devil, "the god of this world had blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them." The work of the devil is to, on the one hand, hide the truth of the gospel, and on the other hand, foster a false Gnostic system of so-called enlightenment that will deceive humans into worshiping him. Satan's Gnosticism from the Greek word gnosis, meaning knowledge, claims to provide the hidden knowledge necessary to become one of the enlightened ones, one who has been illuminated, knowing the great mysteries that lead to becoming as God is. The secret societies with their various orders foster the notion that they hold the secret knowledge that will allow humans to merge into the God realm. Paul warned the young evangelist Timothy about this, as he writes, "Neither give heed to fables and endless genealogies, which minister questions rather than godly edifying, which is in faith, so do." Yes, there is a great Gnostic system, and Satan the devil, no marvel, he himself, as Paul writes, is transformed into an angel of light, and he is deceiving the whole world. When we come back for the next segment of our program, we'll continue to talk about the great end-time deceptions and some of the deceptions that have been foisted off on humankind in recent times. You need to know and know that you know that God exists, that He is the great Creator God, and that He is who He says He is in the pages of the Bible. We have a free booklet that we can send to you. The booklet has to do with the greatest question of the ages: does God exist? So this booklet on the existence of God can be yours free of charge by calling our toll-free number. In addition to that, we will send you the booklet, "What is Your Destiny?" This booklet explains to you the plan and purpose of God and why you were born. To receive the two free booklets, "Does God Exist?" and "What is Your Destiny?", just call our toll-free number. That toll-free number is 1-888-886-5614. Once again, that toll-free number is 1-888-886-5614, and we will send you the free booklets, no follow-up, no one will call on you, no questions asked, and we never ask for money. So, just call that toll-free number, 1-888-886-5614. And now back to World News and Prophecy. Almost every day we hear news that casts doubt with regard to whether or not God is the great Creator. We hear about there being life in outer space, And recently we were told, oh yes, there is great proof that there is water on Mars. And if there's water on Mars, there's probably life on Mars. And then more and more we're led to believe that some way, somehow, there's life forms existing in space. And some speculate that there are life forms that have a higher intelligence than humankind. And maybe these life forms that exist in outer space are really responsible for the creation of the Earth and for humankind. We see that Satan the devil has foisted off on humankind a system of Gnosticism whereby various secret orders and fraternities and even some areas of science and so-called astrology claim to be able to hold the keys to your future and where you're going to wind up after you die. Gnosticism usually takes on one of two forms. Antinomianism, which means against law. So basically, the world of Christianity today teaches antinomianism. The law is done away with. Just believe in Christ. That's all you have to do. He kept the law for you. And thus, just by believing in Him, you'll have eternal life. And the Bible teaches no such thing, of course. Jesus Christ said, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. 1 John 5:3 says, for this is the love of God, that you should keep His commandments, as His commandments are not grievous. And another form of Gnosticism, that probably the form that was most prevalent in the first century church, was that of asceticism. The Gnostics, the ascetic Gnostics, held a dualistic view of humankind, that human beings were physical and they viewed anything physical as evil, but on the other hand, human beings had residing with them a good, pure, immortal soul. And so the challenge was to deny the flesh, to release the soul so it could merge back into the God world. The Gnostics set up a band of emanations from pure light, which they said was God, and that these bands of pure light were inhabited by angels, and that through a certain system of secret knowledge, you could learn the keywords, the genealogies, and thus get back to God. So that's what Paul warned Timothy against when he said, neither give heed to fables and endless genealogies which minister questions, rather than godly edifying, which is in faith, so do. That's 1 Timothy 1:4. Then Paul addresses the question of ascetic Gnosticism also in his epistle to the Colossians. In Colossians 2, verse 18, he writes, let no man beguile you of your reward in a voluntary humility and worshiping of angels. A voluntary humility has to do with denying the flesh and the worshiping of angels, that is, learning these genealogies and secret passwords in order to, quote, get back to God, intruding into those things which he has not seen, vainly puffed up by his fleshly mind. Yes, this knowledge was supposed to be secret knowledge and make you illuminated, enlightened, and better than anyone else. And not holding the head from which all the body by joints and bands, having nourishment ministered and knit together, increases with the increase of God. And the head is, of course, Jesus Christ. And now we come to the present time and one of the great paradoxes of our times. And things haven't changed all that much. In recent decades, there's been a renewed interest in spiritual phenomena as humanity plunges into the depths of depravity. Hollywood portrays the unseen forces of the universe in movies like Star Wars, or Invasion of Aliens, Ghost Demons, and other paranormal phenomena that have been the basis that really have no basis in fact. So on the one hand, humans are being conditioned to believe that there are invisible forces operant in the universe, but on the other hand, Satan the devil is trying to use everything at his disposal to destroy humankind's faith in God, the God of the Bible, but not faith in spiritual phenomena. So that's the paradox. Satan has a great end game, and that is his obsession to replace God as the object of worship. Now enter recent books and movies and archaeological discoveries that are designed to cast doubt on whether Jesus Christ is the Son of God. The books Holy Blood, Holy Grail, and the Da Vinci Code which was made into a movie, have essentially the same storyline and propagate the same big lie. That is, Jesus never died in the tomb, but was revived and gotten out of the tomb by his disciples, who bribed the Roman guards. His supposed wife, Mary Magdalene, escaped the wave of persecution which killed Jesus and traveled to the coast of Normandy, France. She gave birth to a daughter whom Jesus had fathered and later married this daughter to a Merovingian prince. Many of the nobility families of Europe, including Russia and Great Britain, claim that they can trace their lineage back to the Merovingians, to Jesus and King David. This, of course, could play into the deception of one sitting in the temple of God claiming that he is God. But most prophetic scenarios identify a Roman leader as the one who will make the proclamation that he is God. The official biblical record never mentions that Jesus was married, much less fathered a child. Two of the so-called Gnostic Gospels speak of a close relationship existing between Jesus and Mary Magdalene, but even these cryptic works do not state that they were married. It seems that the Christian world was not as shaken by the Holy Blood, Holy Grail, Da Vinci Code fables as the authors and sponsors perhaps thought they would be. Even though the legend asserted that Jesus did not die on the cross, there was no so-called scientific or archaeological proof that Jesus did not die on the cross and was not resurrected from the dead and thus did not ascend into heaven. But now this week, archaeologists come forth with the assertion that they have found 10 coffins containing the bones of Jesus and 9 other people. They claim that through DNA testing, it was determined that the coffins label, or the coffin label with the name Jesus and the one labeled Mary Magdalene, are not related. Thus, it is asserted they could have been married. Since they don't share common DNA, they're not related. Furthermore, one of the coffins is labeled Judah, son of Jesus. However, they didn't mention DNA testing that would link the bones in this coffin with the ones labeled Jesus and Mary Magdalene. As Jay Leno quipped, "We cannot determine who the father of Anna Nicole Smith's baby is in the present age, much less someone who was born 2,000 years ago." Jokes aside, these are serious allegations, and Christians should combat these assertions with great energy and effort. Here are some of the questions believers should want answers to. First of all, is the authenticity of the inscription on the coffins been confirmed? What about the authenticity of the inscription on the coffins? When the ossuary of James was discovered, James the Lord's brother was found, it was agreed that it was, that is the ossuary, was an authentic first century Jewish ossuary with the inscription James the son of Joseph, but the other part of the inscription reading brother of Jesus was in dispute. The charge was made that the brother of Jesus was added to raise the value of the ossuary. At first the inscription brother of Jesus was judged to be a fraud, but now the majority of scholars agree that it is genuine. But of course that does not prove it one way or the other. It should be noted that according to Israeli newspaper accounts, the Israeli Antiquities Authority has been the custodian of the coffins or ossuaries since the discovery was made in 1980. The boxes are being stored in the town of Bet Shemesh near Jerusalem. As noted earlier, two of the boxes have been reportedly flown to New York City, in which a news conference was held on Monday, February 26 of 07. Furthermore, it should be noted that the owner of the James ossuary, Oded Golan, is on trial for forging artifacts, creating a guilt by association impression regarding the ossuary. The Israel Antiquities Authority is an Israeli governmental agency, and some are questioning whether there is some kind of political motivation to try to discredit an artifact that presents strong evidence for the historical authenticity of Jesus Christ. Jewish authorities are not anxious to admit the fact that Jesus existed. Thus, the continued Jewish expectation of a great leader, a Messiah, to come on the scene, fulfilling the promises of the Jews, ruling over the part of the world as they interpret their interpretation of the Old Testament. Other questions that should be asked. Why would the relatives of Jesus, who lived in Nazareth, some 60 miles north of Jerusalem, be buried together in a tomb in Jerusalem? We should also ask, where is the exact location of the cave tomb? What exactly was found inside the ossuaries? How can DNA testing confirm marital spouses? How can we know the inscriptions are genuine and not forgeries? Who found the tomb initially, and how was it discovered? Is there evidence of human presence in the tomb between 30 AD and 1980? Why would they wait 20 years to reveal the existence of these coffins? And once again, are the inscriptions on the ossuaries authentic? It is my guess that the revealing of these coffins at this time was a carefully calculated move. In other words, the arch-deceiver thought the time was ripe. Since the Holy Blood, Holy Grail, Da Vinci Code fable did not provide so-called scientific and archaeological evidence that Jesus did not die on the cross, was not resurrected, and did not ascend into heaven, so now let's rule out the possibilities and say let's rule out the so-called scientific proof. This so-called archaeological find denies the divinity of Jesus and his role as Redeemer and High Priest. In short, it denies the whole plan and purpose of God as revealed in the Bible. One of the greatest overarching themes of the Old Testament centers on the Messiah who would come and redeem humankind and usher in a new age of peace and prosperity wherein dwells righteousness. If Jesus was just another sage, just another prophet akin to Mohammed, Buddha, Krishna, and other sages through the ages, the door is open for other messiahs to come on the scene and lead humankind into a new age of peace and prosperity. One of Satan's greatest future deceptions will be deceiving humankind into believing that the Messiah, the Son of God, has not come in the flesh, thus opening the door for another Messiah to come on the scene. The Apostle John, writing in the 90s AD, states, "Beloved, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits, whether they are of God, because many false prophets are gone out into the world. Hereby know you the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is of God, and every spirit that confesses not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is not of God, and this is that spirit of Antichrist, whereof you have heard that it should come, and even now already is in the world." Satan has been waiting in the wings now for centuries to possess one who will claim to be God, thus deceiving the world into worshiping him. You can read of this in Revelation chapter 13, where the Apostle Paul describes that one will come on the scene who will be given his seat and authority by the great dragon, and all the world will wonder and worship the beast and false prophet that comes on the scene. Are you going to believe the biblical record, or are you going to believe the deceptions that are being foisted off on humanity in the name of science? If God does not exist, then we are indeed of all men most miserable. We're left to the jargon of the Bill Maher's of the world and others who are deceiving them into believing that they can make God over into their own image. God is calling on us who know the truth to stand in the gap and make up the hedge for the day of the Lord. You can know the answers to the great questions of life, and God has given you the incredible gift of a sound mind whereby you can, through faith in the promises of God, quench all the fiery darts of Satan the devil. So open the pages of your Bible now so you won't be deceived, and be sure to be tuned to this station at this time next week for World News and Prophecy. You have been listening to World News and Prophecy for the free literature. Does God exist? What is your destiny? Please call our toll-free number. That number is 1-888-886-5614. And be sure to be tuned to this station next week for World News and Prophecy.